Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. Okay, so last week I was in a hotel room and recording this at 6 o'clock in the morning. This week I'm in a different hotel and it's 1:04 a.m. And I'm trying not to disturb the people in the room next to me, though they are either fighting or screwing in French. I'm not sure. But I heard a bunch of commotion and then I heard footsteps and then I heard peeing. Yay, travel and comedy. So anyway, if you came out to the shows in San Francisco at the Punchline, thank you a million times. The shows were phenomenal. People actually started showing up in costume. There was a table full of Batman, which was awesome. So I would love to keep that trend going. Zanies is coming up in Chicago the 16th to the 19th of this month. I'll also be at C2E2 signing stuff and moderating the Elijah Dushku panel. And then, of course, April 8th in Chicopee, Massachusetts, April 9th at the Wilbur Theater. Details for all that are Nerdist.com. And also, April 4th, our inaugural Nerdist podcast live at Meltdown at our new space with Black Dynamite Night. So we're going to show the movie Black Dynamite, panel with the actors and the director, and then you can get your new Black Dynamite comic book signed, which is called Slave Island, and it's awesome. So I recommend all of that. And also, don't forget that Nerdist podcast listeners can get $10 off earbuds when they go to tweakedaudio.com/Nerdist. With a lowercase n. All right, that's enough talking at you. Now let me prepare you, because when the podcast kicks in, it's about to get louder. So if you've turned your volume all the way up, take it down just a notch, because the screwing French people in the next room, in the midst of their screwing and peeing, cannot hear the podcast part, because they're not as cool as you are. Yeah, take that, Frenchies.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Santa Monica. It's like a pickup truck with a shell on the back of it. And it says emergency human blood delivery. And it's just like a little shell on the pickup truck.
It doesn't even say like stay, 30 feet behind this vehicle.
It's not a joke.
It should.
So how do I sound?
It should be another truck.
Yeah. Another kind of vehicle.
How do I sound?
You sound fine.
Human blood.
Mr.
Human
Pudi? Blood.
Yeah,
human.
Exactly.
Get right in there.
Hello, sound checking.
Excellent.
And you guys sound okay?
We're fine.
Great.
We seem to be recording.
Would we be okay if we used like monkey blood? If we got like really injured and we needed...
No, well, I think our bodies might reject monkey blood. Yeah.
Can we use convict's blood?
Or, as a hilarious comedy turn, the monkey blood in your body makes you throw poop and...
That's just the one. That's worth it.
Yeah.
That's worth it.
Or gives you AIDS.
That was the unofficial sequel. Yeah.
That was the unofficial
sequel to Body Parts.
That was the
unofficial sequel.
Yeah, Body Parts 2, Monkey Blood. They make it out of monkey cum.
He's an athlete. We'll call it Chimpions.
Champions? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's an athlete. And,
we got a whole series of movies that can be on the caliber of, Air Bud movies.
Air Bud or Ed.
Which I think they're up to 7 different Air Bud movies now.
But, of course, I think they'd probably destroy 3 or 4 dogs per movie.
Yeah, and that's why they have puppies. They're in the puppy area now. It's Golden Retriever puppies. So there's, like, Santa Paw buddies and
Santa
buddies. And they go into space, Air Buddies.
What?
I just talked to
Alex got to space.
Before you, yes.
Well, but like Laika, wasn't that the name of the Russian dog that went into space?
Yes, that they said went into space.
Come on.
By the way, I talked to web soup writer Mike Henry on the phone today.
Love Mike Henry.
He called me and he goes, "You'll never guess where I am." And I didn't. He was like, "I'm at a puppy party."
Oh, that's right. He told me about it.
He was at a puppy party.
What does that involve?
Everyone, I don't know. Everyone brings puppies.
I don't know. Yeah, he told me
about
it. I heard
him yipping in the background.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Why did he call me? Why isn't he taking pictures? Why isn't anything on Tumblr?
I don't know.
All these questions for Mike.
Puppy party.
That sounds awesome. This
well,
is like heaven.
Yeah, it does.
This is our puppy party with Danny Pudi. Danny Pudi, you're the...
Our quest to get the entire
Our quest to get all of Community.
How far have we come?
We got Joel, Ali Bree, and Donald Glover.
Ah, I'm the fourth.
You're the fourth.
I like that.
Yep.
Well, thank you for having me.
Of course. Yep. You might be the last. I don't know anyone else on the show. So you might be the last.
Griswold, we got to get him in here.
I don't know if I...
Want to?
Well, I do. I do. I just... But when it comes to... I mean, you work with Chevy all the time, so I'm sure it's old hat for you. But when it comes to people who...
Who explains a podcast to him?
Well, first of all, there's that. And then second of all... it's also one of the reasons why I've been nervous about trying to get Steve Martin on the podcast. Like, I just don't know if I could keep it together enough to have a conversation
with
him.
You did well with Matt Smith from Doctor Who.
That's true, but Matt...
Granted, Matt, he did not come into your life.
Number one, Matt is younger than I am. And number two, so that gives me an automatic age seniority over him. And number two, I am an immense Who fan, and I love his character. But... You know, Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, Bill Murray, like people like these influenced me as a person comedically. Yeah. So that's why I don't know. What was it? I mean, when you first met him, was there pants shitting?
What was there was.
On his part.
it's a steady stream from Chevy. you know, it's funny when people say like, oh, you've worked with him, because I have now. It's been a year working with Chevy. Which is a great title for a memoir.
Yep.
And,
a year of Chevy's.
A year of Chevy's. It's very interesting, you know, because I'm from Chicago, and so definitely influenced by, you know, Chevy, Vacation and everything. That's always, and it still is, the first question anybody ever asks me. What's it like working with Chevy?
Mm-hmm.
I think people kind of know there's this sort of, like, allure and also, like, does he throw stuff at people, that kind of thing. There's always a little bit of that. He does throw things, and he threw some candy at my crotch one of the first weeks we were working. It's all joking, you know.
Well, he's an old man. Yeah. It was a little hard candy, and he just has bad aim.
By the way, that is an impossible question to answer. Like, when people ask me...
Yeah.
What's it like to work with Olivia Munn, or what's it like to work with... Like, what's it like?
What?
I don't know how to... To analogize it.
Yeah.
It's sort of strange. I think people just want a story. You know what I mean? I think they want kind of a random story. As far as with Chevy, I mean, I think he, you know, has mispronounced my name, but that's kind of, you know, that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he still knows how to pronounce my name. What else has happened?
Danny. He can't say Danny?
Yeah. I don't think he knows Danny is my name. I think he called me Timmy or something from Caddyshack. I think he thinks that
Timmy?
I'm living in his movie.
Wow.
I like you, Betty. It's Danny, sir.
Danny, Timmy? Timmy Puda. But it's really interesting. I think... you know, all this stuff is really wild and fun to experience. You know, my first big TV show and all that kind of stuff. You know, and then having someone who's from, you know, movies that you grow up with is just really surreal. Being in all these scenes all the time, and you sort of just it becomes work and normal. You know, even though when I go back home and talk to my family and stuff in Chicago and everyone, they're like, "So you're working with Chevy Chase?" Then I'm like, "Oh yeah, it is weird when I see his." Christmas card on my refrigerator.
it came directly from him.
Yeah, it's unusual.
Is it just the cover of a Christmas Vacation? Happy holidays from Chevy Chase.
He's being electrocuted.
Yeah,
in Christmas
lights. Yeah, exactly.
He gave me a pen for Christmas.
Wow.
He is an old man.
He gave me a pen.
And a crisp dollar bill.
Which I thought was unusual but kind of perfect.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wait,
was it a good pen though?
It was a really good pen. The pen was worth more than everything in my house. And it was engraved with my name, so I thought that was funny. I think it was made
Timmy.
Out of... it's an engraved pen, Timmy. Yeah, am I? Made out of alligator skin, I think, crocodile. I don't know which one you use for skins, but I think it's one of those.
Both, I think.
Allodiles.
Yeah.
Crocodators.
You have to first, you have to cross them. You have to make a hybrid crocodile alligator and then make them out of the pen.
Don't cross the gators. Don't. Oh, that was far reaching. I apologize for that. That was not okay.
It's unusual, but I think okay the one great thing about working with Chevy is that everyone I feel like has a story in some way, whether or not it was a movie they watched with their family or tradition, you know, or a random kind of experience with him on a set. I think that's it's sort of a fun thing to be part of. You know, I feel like it's like a history kind of lesson every day.
Yeah.
I keep thinking that for the longest time they were, you know, there was always the Fletch reboot was always seemed like it was in the hopper. Yeah. And I kept thinking like there's no one that could do it. And I actually I think Mikhail could be could pull it off.
Yeah.
I think if they ever reboot Fletch, I think Mikhail could pull it off.
I definitely think he could do it. I think they were talking about that at one point. And I remember Chevy sort of like teasing Joel about it for a while. And then, you know, Joel teasing him back in many other ways.
Because they're both mammothly tall.
Yeah, they're both over 6'4", yep. I believe.
With the afro, 6'9".
Very tall, very good looking. Dudes, you know, kind of in their prime. Chevy, which reminds me sort of, I think the time that we were making we were discussing whether or not there should be a reboot of Fletch. Was the episode when we were it was the bottle episode when we were all in the study room together. And Chevy happened to be in a wheelchair that episode. And all the guys we discovered that week had to be topless, you know. And so, you know, obviously the first thing we're doing is push-ups in the study room. And Chevy was so frustrated because he saw us all, you know, topless, and he saw Joel in his underwear. And, you know, Joel has large muscles, and I don't. But I think Chevy seeing that was like, you know, seeing himself as Fletch, you know, back in the day. But he was in a wheelchair, forced to watch these three men.
Just like
do,
a nightmare he had when he was in his 30s.
It was very strange, but I just saw, like, in his eyes, like, everything happening and him discussing Fletch, and you know, just started quoting movies. You know, I don't even remember what was happening, but he just started telling stories about, you know, 1984, the year. And it was just an interesting thing to watch, you know, watch Joel do push-ups in front of Chevy in a wheelchair.
That sounds like a weird dream. Yeah. That is a weird dream. Joel McHale was doing push-ups, and then Chevy Chase was in a wheelchair.
That's pretty awesome.
That sounds
ridiculous. He was quoting 80s movies. that would never happen.
But that was work.
That's not a bad job.
No, it's pretty awesome.
I mean, people have to understand how difficult it is, first of all, to get a job, second of all, to get a job that gets on the air, and then third, to get a job that stays on the air, and fourth, that is critically acclaimed, that people are actually enjoying.
Yeah, it's I feel very, very lucky because you know, right away from the beginning of this show, you know, I'm lucky because I auditioned for this just like any other job, and you never know as an actor what you're going to get, and it's like you have a lot of choice. Especially when you're like someone like me who's just kind of starting out, looking for any kind of half Palestinian, half white role. Thankfully, the right one came into my hands. Yeah.
So what is that? Well, first of all, my girlfriend. You've been friends with my girlfriend Janet forever,
yes. Mm-hmm.
And Janet adores you and would always say, "Oh my God, Danny Pudi,
she's the best."
And then before you got Community, we all went to breakfast. I think at the Alcove.
That's
maybe?
Right. Uh huh. And I spilled milk on my crotch.
And you spilled milk on your crotch. But it was fun, and I was like, "Oh my God, Danny Pudi's so fucking funny," and so it was so nice to see, like, a couple months later, "Holy shit, he got on the show!" And then the show ends up being huge.
It's really crazy. I mean, I read that script, and actually, I worked with Janet like, I don't know, 2-3 years ago. We did a pilot together where it was all improvised, and it was like a political based pilot about a unlikely congressional candidate moving from Arizona to Washington, D.C. And it was all improvised and it was crazy. A great experience.
Love that when producers put that responsibility on the actors.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll just let them improvise.
Yeah.
So in other words, you just want people to write your show for you.
Yeah.
You want the performers to write
the audition
your show.
Process. Just bring us in some ideas.
Yeah, and then we'll take them.
It was terrifying. Every day. I mean, it was exhilarating at times because you were like, "Holy crap, that was so fun. I didn't even know what we were talking about." But then you'd leave every day being like, "We have to do this again tomorrow." So that was tough. But it was a really great experience because you kind of realize, okay, I can do things. I don't think I'm going to be able to get away with anything. This one, on the other hand, is so specifically written, you know, Community. So the minute I read the script, I was just like, wow, it's unbelievable. I mean, every character is just so fleshed out. I see everything. It's all about second chances. It's all about this kind of group of underdogs. In this world where sort of you know, like this fantasy magic can happen. Mm-hmm. You know, it's these very grounded and real characters, but there's this sort of absurdity around them, and kind of a, like a little bit of a sadness to it, which I was just like, this is, I mean, wonderful to be part
of. It's all very Dan Harmony.
Very,
it's like
yeah.
Dan Harmony, just that, that like great characters, fantastical ideas yes. and situations, and a lot of sadness.
Yeah,
and
yeah. It's sort of all that in one, which I thought was just incredible to read a pilot, first of all, and come away the whole time like trembling, being like, I want to be part of this show so badly. You know, my first, very first monologue, I think Joel's character, Jeff Winger, asked me what time it is, and I proceed to tell him everything. I'm only half Arabic, actually, and my dad's angry, but not angry at America, angry because my mom left him. And I just go through this whole thing, and I was just like, well, this is incredible. That's Abed right there within, you know, the very first breath. And not only that, but then you find out, you know, the Russo brothers are directing it from Arrested Development, you know, and then Chevy Chase, this young up-and-comer, is attached to it.
Did you know all that before you went in to test for the show?
I knew, by the time I tested, yes, but not with the first audition. With the first audition, I don't think Chevy was announced yet or whatever it was. I knew that the Russo brothers were attached to it, and I knew at the time that Joel was, I think, the lead.
Mm-hmm. The soup guy's doing
yeah.
it?
which is, and I actually worked with Joel right after I worked with Janet on a pilot too that we shot here, directed by Jason Weiner.
Was it the IT Crowd? Yeah.
It was Giants of Radio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it was about behind the scenes of a radio station. I played Teddy, the engineer, you know, that kind of guy. 45% Abed, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I got a chance to work with Joel, which was really cool. And then I saw him in this role, and the minute I read it, I was like, he's perfect for this.
Yeah.
There was just a lot of things where I was like, I would love to be part of this show. You could just see it immediately. And that's very rare when you read something the very first time, especially in pilot, and be like, wow, I could see everything, you know? Yeah. So I was very lucky, and, you know, I obviously had no idea where the show was going to go. I didn't know we were going to be doing episodes about a space bus, but it's certainly gone there.
Now, in the process, because I don't know if people understand, but auditioning is an entirely separate skill to actual acting, because you're in a room with you're in a sterile environment and you're reading opposite people who can't act in any way because they're casting assistants or they're, you know, or casting people, and so they're just kind of giving you their flat half of the read, and so much about creating a performance or a scene together is just working off the chemistry of other people.
That's it.
So you put, and then on top of that, when you want something really, really, really bad, plus the nervousness factor when you start going to this place of, if I get this job, I can't help but think about all the ways my life will change. How are you able to focus and not fuck it up?
I'm not. I mean, I auditioned, I think, 5 times for that role. It's very difficult because you do show up to these things. And the other thing is that, like, you show up to these auditions, and someone like me, who is a little darker, a little brown, you show up to these roles where I'm auditioning for the role of Abed, where there's 5 other people that look like you as well.
And actually one named Abed.
And actually a person named Abed, who you show up with at the test, at the studio test. And this guy comes up to you and he's like, hey, I'm Abed. And I'm like, me too. And then he's like, no, really. And I'm like, okay, this is great. I don't have this job anymore.
Right.
So there's all kinds of mind games. It's incredibly, incredibly difficult. I don't understand it. I don't know if there's an easier way. To me, the only way to kind of get through it was to focus as hard as I could on the text, the focus as hard as I could on the audition piece. But it's nearly impossible to not let all those thoughts get into your head.
Yeah.
You show up in this room. You're sitting around. They ask if you want any water. You're like, I need water and a lot more than that.
Yes.
You're constantly battling diarrhea because you're so nervous. And your life does change. I mean, I just spent a year working with Chevy Chase. You know, it's a crazy thing.
And also, you have regular income. You probably have some disposable income now that you didn't have before.
It's the first time in my life where I cannot think about buying sushi. It's very exciting. You know,
You could buy sushi every day and just throw it away. That's really where you're at.
I could.
And yeah,
I
do that anyway. That's why I think
that's a goal people should shoot for: is disposable sushi income. Yeah. I want to get to the disposable sushi level where I can just buy,
throw away
sushi and just throw away some sushi.
elaborate wooden boat in front of me on a table and then just slowly slide it off the table while staring at the wooden
trash can.
Don't need it.
One of those sushi conveyor belts and it just goes right into
just,
a bin.
Yeah, just constantly.
Nope. Nope. And
don't
then you
need
just
it.
Pay him and then you leave.
Yeah. Count the plates.
I paid
I'm
you to dispose of that sushi.
That would be a decadent, fucked up thing to do for rich people is just have restaurants where they just come to they pay to throw away really expensive food.
Excuse me, where do you throw away your Toro?
Yeah. Exactly. That would be I see a future there. I see a money making scheme.
I always like to think that rich people being crazy and lazy is why most of the technology happens. Where it's like there's a I always think it's like a crazy guy who's rich is like, I don't want to tie my own shoes. They're like, well, we'll make these so they're like Velcro strips. They're like, that's perfect. Velcro shoes have been invented.
Yep. I think I'm positive that's how that
had to be. 10,000 years ago, we were worried about our farm and war.
Yeah. Doesn't want to.
I'm tired of having lobster farts. I'm just going to throw this food away instead. Rich people have lobster farts, in case you guys didn't know.
But lobsters don't have lobster farts.
Lobsters
have old people
yes,
farts.
Yes, because lobsters are really wealthy.
Yes,
so lobsters.
They are the rich of the sea.
I always think when you look at cockroaches, when you look at lobsters, I always think they're cockroaches. They are the cockroaches of the sea, and yet a delicacy for some reason.
No, they're
they don't seem particularly challenging to catch.
No, they just kind of sit there and like kind of like go real. Anything somebody's real slow at the bottom of anything.
Yeah.
You put a cage near them and they get in it. It's not that hard, you know.
Yeah, maybe they're not so much like cockroaches. Maybe they're just like cats of the sea. Like it really is it really that is it really
yeah,
that
that's
challenging?
A horrible ad campaign.
That is
the cats of the sea.
Guys, back to the drawing boards. We're fucking dying. Yeah. I'm curious to know what the experience is like for you being a half Palestinian white guy.
Yeah.
Half white guy.
Yeah.
What is it like navigating the industry? Because I'm sure they will pigeonhole you a lot and be like, you're an Indian guy.
Yes.
You're an Arab. You're Iranian. You're like they'll probably just throw you into any kind of Middle Eastern thing. Is that upsetting emotionally, or do you just feel like I'm an actor? I mean, is it the same as me going, yeah, I can play like I'm from Boston, or play like I'm from Canada, or play like I'm from Britain?
Yeah.
It's very racist of you to say
you
that.
You can't play Canadian, Chris.
I am half Indian and half Polish, so I do have – it's accessible to me to be to understand sort of the biracial thing. You know, my dad was born in India. My mom was born in Poland.
So that makes you
– So that makes me Pindian.
Yes.
Yay. All the Pindians out there.
What?
Yep.
Oh, that one guy. Yeah.
No, what? We don't understand you. We're half Polish. Come on, you guys.
Come on.
Look what I almost stepped in. All
Use right. your Indian sides.
Yes.
To analyze that. Anyways, I have been seen as Indian largely because I look Indian, you know, though I feel way more Polish. I'm okay with it. You know, I think that, you know, years ago, we've progressed. I think growing up, I was like, wow, there's just one point of view here. You know, magic rocks protect our villages, Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom.
Yep.
And that's pretty much, you know.
Kalima.
Kalima.
Magic
rock. Voodoo dolls and all that. And I love that movie, by the way.
That's great.
But, like, it was that. And then, like, video game characters like, you know, the Great Tiger and Dalsim. So there's
well,
this.
You just got to watch his jewel line.
Yeah, and that's when you get him,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
You know, there was nothing really I could sort of relate to growing up, you know. But I kind of just used that to my, I guess, advantage and being like, well, whatever. Well, I'm kind of everything. And, you know, that's sort of happened out here. I've auditioned for all kinds of stuff. And, you know, prior to Community, I did a couple roles, actually, where I didn't play an Indian character. But then also in 2007, I played three different Sanjays. So there is still that, you know. And I think that those characters weren't necessarily defined by their ethnicity, but they were given a title right away of this character is clearly Indian, and we just want to make sure everyone is aware of that. I don't know why people sometimes need to, I guess, feel the need to do that, but yeah.
Not buffalo carving Indian. You mean tech support Indian.
This is, yeah.
Is that racist?
No. It's accurate. this was definitely, you know, dots, not feathers. Same
right.
thing, you know.
Right.
And you know what? I am Indian, you know, though my name is Daniel. I understand that. I understand the need to kind of label things, although I'm very excited about playing a character who's not, you know, defined by his ethnicity. And he is half Palestinian, which I'm not. But it's kind of fun for me to kind of go and explore that area as well. you know, and I think if you look at the state of television right now, it's kind of a good time right now for Indians. On the whole, I think we're very much a safe
Indians. Hey guys, Indians the new black.
It sort of is. I've actually heard that a number of times from people. We're sort of the safe, good minority, you know, right now.
Well, there are a billion Indian people in the world.
Yeah,
And they
and 32 roles.
Yeah, 32. I have to say, I was randomly watching Bollywood movies the other day because they are so
hilarious,
fucking hypnotic.
Yeah, they're colorful. They're 3 hours long. Yeah. There's moments of drama. There's moments of romance. There's dance.
And you can't tell the difference between any of those moments.
There's great fake fights where like the fist like misses the face by a good foot. But you hear the punching noise like 10 minutes after. Yeah. They're fantastic.
I think I enjoy them unironically. I think I enjoy them on a very direct level.
There's some great ones too with just the music. The music is really lovely in a lot of them.
Do you ever go to India?
I've never been to India, no.
Poland?
I've been to Poland 4 times. Not really like Bollywood movies at all. Polish films are much darker. They're very stoic people, a lot more existential kind of the films are.
So the workers don't unite into a big dance number?
They should. It's
almost as if they went through something way too traumatic to do anything. Well, dance.
I don't know what that would be.
It would be a very strong song at like a shipyard in Gdansk. Yes. That would be the equivalent to a Bollywood dance number at a train station.
Did you seek out any of your relatives in Poland and knock on the door and be like, cousin? See what they would say.
I did, actually. And I met them, and they're very friendly. My family is very, they're very Polish. They're very, very Polish and very serious. So it's actually really kind of fun to go there and visit them and see people, and we take pictures with them. And I'm like, hey! And I'm smiling right now. And there's no smiles across the board in any of the pictures because that's just sort of the cultural thing.
It just looks like Depression era photos.
There's no difference between pictures from like the 1930s and between now.
still black and white.
Except the length of the dresses and stuff. That's pretty much it.
Their frowns suck out any color in the pictures.
Well, the frowns just lift to a neutral position, the smile. It's just the straight across.
I like smiling in pictures. I'm glad that we've done that here in America.
I'm such a terrible smiler.
Are you? Do you get nervous before the picture?
Yeah, I just feel like when I try to smile, I look like I've just had a stroke of some sort. I can't quite get it right.
I hate it. I always do the I just saw something off camera. I like the most pictures of me are just me just like looking off like I'm about to say something to somebody. That's the way to do it.
I make these weird noises people have told me right before I take a picture with people where I'm like – and I don't know necessarily what I'm doing, but somehow the noise helps me put like a happy smile, like a natural, spontaneous
like a growl.
Smile. It's sort of – it's a growly hiss.
That's just you holding in your soul so it doesn't get stolen.
That's right. And you're through your smile.
Yeah.
That's when they get you.
That's how they get you.
If you see pictures of me and I'm not smiling and I'm making like a weird raised eyebrow face, it's because I hate my smile.
I'm always overjoyed.
He's so happy. He's so happy.
You have such a great, likable smile.
How are you doing?
Oh man!
Such a likable smile.
I just want to take pictures of you, you.
Please do.
Brightens the room. Brightens the room.
It really does.
I try.
You're just like a big old heat lamp.
You pop. You pop.
That's what they say.
Have you met the actual Abed?
I have, and
hung out with him.
There's been a couple of times I've met him. So I met him actually. The very first time I met him was at the audition process, and it was me, Abed, and a couple other actors, which was weird because
the role was based off of him.
The role was
inspired
based off of him. Yeah, it was.
He's a Channel 101 guy. He's been around for a while, and he's very funny, really nice, hilarious guy. But the role was kind of like inspired by him, and then he didn't get it. Which everyone, you were like,
so
the perfect.
He smiled, and Dan Harmon was able to steal his soul.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He put him in the role.
Yeah. But it's
that
so
was before
funny.
I developed the growly hiss. I did meet him there, and he's from Channel 101, and that's where Dan Harmon comes from. This, and a lot of the characters in Community are sort of based loosely off people that Dan knows.
Even the dean's name is Dean Pelton, which is a guy. There's a guy named Dean Pelton in the Channel 101 scene.
I used to love to go to those Channel 1 screenings, the 101 screenings at CineSpace.
Yeah, they're awesome.
There's
they're downtown
a new space now.
Yeah, downtown independent.
Yeah, and then the second time I actually met him was at the Channy Awards.
That's right, I was there.
Oh, yeah, okay. So I met him, and Dan was like, hey, would you present an award with Abed? And I was like, yeah, sure, not knowing at all what he had in mind. And he didn't. She didn't show us what he wrote or anything. It was all on the teleprompter. Next thing I know, I'm up there with the real Abed, which was really awesome and super fun. He's a lovely person, great guy, and we had a really fun time. And but then I'm reading on the teleprompter, I think Abed's line to me was, the last time that I said something to Dan Harmon, he used it and made a show out of it. And then I said, and now I have a speedboat. and this is in front of a lot of people, and I was like, "Oh boy, this is a little uncomfortable." But it was really fun.
Yeah, everyone was into it. It's a very self-deprecating crowd. Yeah. Channel 101. You know,
I told Dan I still have flashbacks of some couple of videos there. I think one was called Everything, and another
great.
Then another one was of this guy wearing the silver wig who kept turning into frame to the song I think by Maxwell, where it was like, crying.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just, the visual, that's all it was.
Yeah.
Of this guy turning into frame with one tear and then, in a silver wig. And I don't know anything about the story. I don't know anything about the movie. But immediately I was just like, I know that story.
Yeah.
It's a universal story.
Do they keep all those online?
Those are all, you go to channel101.com.
I remember the Boo.
The Boo was great. That's where the Lonely Island guys came from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they all came from that. And then that's how they got that pilot originally at Fox and stuff. Yeah, it's a great scene.
It's a great scene. And it's incredible how many people have sort of have ties to that. I run into people all the time who are, you know, cross paths. They're like, oh, Channel 1, I know Dan from that.
I mean, Channel 101 works the way the internet should work. Like, fun, talented people get together, they make stuff, and then they go on to actually get jobs.
Yeah, and a lot of those guys are starting to come up to, like, you know, Danny Jelenic, who does Everything.
Yeah.
He just got a job as a director at Funny or Die.
Oh, no way.
Yeah,
okay.
So it's just like, you know, those... And a couple of the guys, Romansky and J.D. Reznor, like they do Blue Mountain State for Spike now. Like everyone kind of comes up and ends up. And they end up finding jobs that they wouldn't normally think they were going to do. But, you know, one of the guys that did Yacht Rock, which was a very popular series, like he's now a locations manager. That makes a good living off of that. It's crazy.
And I met your buddy Mike Chilean, who
Mike Chilean, who did McBusters.
McBusters.
Yeah. The third one's going to be epic. My girlfriend Deanna's also helping out on that one.
Nice.
Yeah. It's going to be big.
I played Morgan Spurlock in it, and I felt bad because I didn't do a good Morgan Spurlock impersonation.
But it was still a funny.
And then I tweeted about it, and Morgan Spurlock tweeted back.
Oh, did he?
Sorry, I impersonated you.
Yeah, Mike Chilean was so. He's like, that's weird. I never expected he would see it.
Don't ever underestimate the power of someone to see stuff on the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
They will stumble across it.
Yeah.
Where did you started in Chicago, you said?
I did, yeah. I was born and raised in Chicago. I guess a lot of the things that I found funny are kind of based on my household, because my house was a little crazy, because I was raised with my mom and her Polish family because my parents were divorced. And so we always had sort of this rotating cast of characters in our house who were, you know, recent immigrants to America who were always staying with us. We were sort of the first family in America. So we always were going to the airport picking up an aunt or an uncle who wasn't really an aunt or an uncle, that kind of thing. And it was
a tuba, an accordion, all the things that they sent over.
Lots of accordions. We had the accordion closet.
Lots of sweatpants.
it was that experience. But it was super fun because it was, you know, constantly weird stories of growing up somewhere else and very colorful. And then as soon as I went outside, you know, our neighborhood was sort of Polish and Hispanic. I think the Hispanic – I looked a little bit more Hispanic when I was younger, I think. And so I think some of the neighborhood kids, you know, like Carlos, you know, used to think that, you know, I would understand where they were coming from. And then the Polish kids definitely were like, we know you'd understand where we're coming from. So I was sort of like in the middle of all that.
You were too niche.
Yeah.
You were very niche.
From an early age, I was very niche.
You weren't appealing.
So I grabbed my sweatpants and my accordion. Started my one-man show.
Forget the tubas.
Your one-man show, Sanjay and me?
Poor Sanjay.
Yeah.
Three Sanjays.
Finding my inner chai.
It was 2006.
Oh, shit.
That would be, if I went back, that would be the title of it. But I grew up watching a lot of movies with, like, my brother. I remember my brother and his friends always watching, like, Monty Python and stuff like that and Saturday Night Live. And I was a huge fan of that. And actually, that's kind of where Chevy sort of came into the mix, because I was a big fan of Saturday Night Live then. And I didn't understand necessarily all of it, but I loved the whole kind of you know, like Ministry of Funny Walks and that whole stuff with Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I mean, they're still like, you know, bring out your dad. I still remember them doing that, and the woman in the background banging a cat against a wall. Like, just like little things like that, like really struck out to me, you know. And then like Police Academy, so watch that and like over and over again. So I sort of kind of immersed myself in movies and that kind of thing.
Oh my God. Michael Winslow just walked in the room.
Here. Sorry, guys, let me put my laser away.
What's crazy about the Police Academy was how cool Steve Guttenberg was then, to compare it to how now he's just a big joke, he's a punchline. But he was the coolest guy, he was Mahoney.
Mahoney was pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. I mean, that and Short Circuit. I mean, that was another one.
Which had an Indian guy played by a white guy.
But played by a white guy.
Totally. Parker Stevenson.
Yeah.
Not Parker Stevenson.
Mike, what?
No, it was, God damn it.
He just won the Academy Award for the
Fisher Stevens.
Fisher Stevens.
Yeah, because he dated Michelle Pfeiffer. He's like I heard he's a player.
Yeah.
He had sex with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. If you're Johnny Five, you can get whatever you want, man. Come on.
Only the gold Johnny Five. We know what women want.
So I think that, you know, watching all those movies and then having the whole like the history of like Second City at the time, which was really, you know, kind of big in Chicago and still remains to be remains one, you know, a huge, you know, effect on me comedically. And so I went to college at Marquette and actually won a scholarship in honor of Chris Farley, which sort of led me to
you
Second
did?
City. I did.
Wow. There's a Farley scholarship?
There is. Yeah.
How did you get that?
I was the first actually Chris Farley scholarship award winner. I didn't even know it existed until my junior year at college. And then someone told me that there was a scholarship. And
remember that time? Remember?
You got it, kid.
Yeah. That time you won the scholarship?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Such an idiot.
Yeah.
So stupid.
But he, I mean, watching him and all that stuff, you know, down by the river and everything, you know, it was, you know, a huge influence on me. And I think our junior year of college, they established the scholarship in his name. And I believe the theater director at the time told me about it. And, you know, I think I had to write an essay and stuff. And I won it. And I was like very happy. And my mom was happy because it involved some money for school. So that was really cool. But that really sort of kind of gave me a little kick in the butt to be like, oh, maybe I should start, you know, really focusing on this a little bit more besides just jumping on tables and pouring potatoes on my head, you know?
Which we all did to get into comedy.
Which, I mean, come on. That's, everyone's done one of those. Everyone's put food on themselves as a joke.
Okay. That's a weird moment, though, when you're a funny guy or you're the funny guy in your friends and then to, like, then make the decision to be funny or try to be funny for a living. And then it seems that you become less funny to your friends once you start doing that.
To your non-comedy friends?
Yeah, to just your friends. Because, you know, like, it's like if you just your buddies growing up and you're the funny guy and you're like, hey, you know, I'm going to do this. And then every time you make a joke, they're all very – it's like, I know, so all my friends are very hesitant to laugh at anything after that point.
Yeah. Oh, because you're studying now. Oh, did you learn that in funny school?
Yeah, exactly. You're trying out jokes on me now, bro? Yeah.
No, this is what I always did.
I don't think I have any non-comedy friends anymore.
Really? You don't have any, like, barometers, like, people you go to that are sort of your, like, test for, like, you know, if they thought Hangover was funny or if they, you know, stuff like people like that that I, like, I have friends sort of, like, you know, still in Chicago and stuff that I really like to check in with every once in a while because when they find something really funny, it's always interesting to me, you know? It's like, does it reach them?
My, I mean, my dad is a barometer, but for, like, the broadest kind of comedy. You know, like my dad, like 6 or 7 years ago, called me and he said, you should really check out this thing called blue collar comedy. I mean, you are Southern and you would really understand it. I'm like, if microbes could understand it. Like, they don't have to be Southern microbes. So his sense of comedy is very... The sense of comedy is very broad. Did I talk about it? I asked this question a lot. Did I talk about it on the podcast when Furman and I did El Corazon on Jimmy Kimmel? Did anybody talk about that yet?
Oh, I don't know. I think so.
We did. When we did El Corazon, Mike Furman and I do a Spanish song that's all just medical facts about the heart, but we wrote in Spanish and we perform it as a Latino love ballad.
Awesome.
And so when we did it on Kimmel a few years ago, we had it subtitled. And my dad was like, I saw your Kimmel appearance. I didn't understand why you didn't do it in English. And I go, well, Well, because the whole concept is that it's, you know, it's medical facts about the heart. It wouldn't be funny if we sang that in English. It's funnier if we sing it in Spanish. And, you know, it sounds very pretty, but then you see that it's just very
straight. He wanted it in the southern accent. Yeah. Like, he wanted the blue collar.
No, he just thought it was – he was like – it was just like I had to read the subtitles at the bottom, and it just really took me out of it. Oh, man. I'm like, well –
it's funny.
It's not for everyone.
Yeah, that's a tough thing too, kind of coming to that realization that sometimes your jokes aren't going to hit with everyone. They're not going to resonate with everyone.
And do you want to be on the Kaufman scale or on the, you know, the Jeff Dunham scale? I don't know.
But I think that in college I sort of started to realize like, "Oh, I should study this." Because I think growing up being the funny guy or growing up and doing comedy with your friends, there's this sort of kind of assumption that a lot of it is like, oh, they don't care, or they're just sort of aimless, and they're part of being funny or part of comedy is a sort of like just aimlessness, not knowing what they're going to do with their life. And so actually taking direction of your life and actually studying the comedy, it's a weird thing, but people I don't think realize that. A lot of times they don't realize that that's actually – no, it's important to do, just like anything else.
History. I mean, how many times have you been in a show and then like someone heckles because they're the funny person in their group?
Yeah.
And then, like you always get a sense like, all right, you're the dude that everyone thinks that in your immediate friend group is funny, but you guys all work at a paper company. Yeah, so or you work at your accountants, so he's funny to you, but not really, not globally funny.
Yeah.
Not globally funny. So it's not, you know, maybe it's not for everybody. Yeah. Did you ever do stand-up, or did you do sketch and improv?
Mostly sketch and improv. I did a little bit of stand-up. I just was not good at it. I was never felt like really comfortable with it. I loved acting more. I loved being part of it, either an ensemble or a character. That, to me, was like the most fun, and it still is the most fun, is like, you know. So I think early on it was a lot more of like doing, not really impressions, but sort of for my family, like impressions of like Polish relatives or,
you have to do one.
Okay. All right. I mean, my favorite guy is Pan Richard, who was my Polish dance instructor as a kid. And
of course. Wait, he was Polish and a dance instructor, or he taught you Polish dance?
He taught me specifically Polish dance.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if he knew any other dances, but.
Is there any other dances?
for Pan Richard, there is. No, you're right.
It is actually just the bidden dance. It's not forbidden. Polish dance is just
bidden.
It's just bidden.
Yeah.
But I love Pan Richard because he came from definitely this era of, you know, Cold War. I mean, growing up, you know, it was still like right when, you know, the Berlin Wall came down and everything. So there was this still like big heavy tension with all my Polish relatives, you know, this definite fear, you know, of communism. And he came from that era. He was a very strict dance instructor, very strict. And I used to love it because he used to always yell at us as kids and stuff like that. And my family, you know, would just kind of like just trust him and be like, you have to listen to Pan Richard no matter what. You know, you have to listen to Pan Richard. And sometimes I wish that it was more like that now with kids. But I remember every Saturday fearing him. But so this is – I'm going to give you a little bit of Pan Richard.
And that's just that's his full name, Pan Richard?
I have no idea what his last name is, but his name is Richard.
Okay.
Pan means Mr. or Sir.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah,
okay.
So there's Pan Richard, and his wife was Pani Misha. Pani is like Mrs.
Okay.
And Pan Richard and Pani Misha. Pani Misha was hot. She was pretty attractive. And then they were sort of like good cop, bad cop when they were dance instructors. And Pan Richard was like hardcore. He wore fake boots. He was great. And he had a huge mustache. So as a little kid, it was terrifying. So, you know, you chill for dance, and you'd be like, lazy. Chodź tutaj, Daniel! Kurva shit. You are so lazy. You must listen to your mother. Where is she? Smile. Why are you not smiling? Where is smile? This is happy dance. Why are you not smiling? Hands up. There you go. Okay, good. Come here. Where are your shoes? No shoes? Okay, maybe it's not bad. It's okay. It's not bad. That's sort of Pan Richard.
It's
a free association.
Did someone in The Simpsons attend that same class? Because that's where they have that character Lugash, the gymnastics instructor. Yeah. I am Lugash.
Pan Richard is not bad. He's a good man. Sometimes I get a little Russian with him, but I always remember him. What I loved about him the most was him yelling at me and then telling me to smile, which I always like. It was always like, Kurva, get here.
Smile! I tell you to smile!
The happy dance.
This is happy dance. And I would always be like, yeah, I know, and I'm trying to smile while kind of holding in tears.
It's just like the shitty dad on a vacation. We're all having a good time. Right? Let's go. We're in the happiest fucking place on earth.
So it's fun.
It's fun.
It's fun.
In your dance class, did you get into a weird lesbian stalker-like relationship with Mila Kunis? Or am I remembering something else?
Let me see. There was a couple. There was an Allah and
I have not seen Black Swan yet.
Oh,
but someone just described it to it this way to me. They said, Black Swan is what I took away from it is Natalie Portman keeps trying to masturbate, getting interrupted, and then just gets frustrated and goes crazy.
Yeah.
That's one way of looking at it. And it's valid.
She keeps trying to masturbate, and people keep interrupting her. She never gets to finish the job, and so she goes crazy.
She's supposed to fly.
Terribly frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the creepiest. It's so weird. There's a scene in it where she starts to masturbate, and then she rolls over
and her mom is
her mom's there sleeping on the like a chair.
Yeah,
next
she's
to her.
In the corner, and it's,
I think every guy in the audience that was like the one thing they could maybe connect to in the movie. We're just like they're like getting caught by their mom masturbating. I get it.
Yep,
now.
I get that.
Yeah,
It was scratching. It was really itching.
That's the excuse.
Little Sally Draper.
It was Sally Draper.
But I did. I think parts of that movie did resonate with me because of the dance instructor. The dance instructor was pretty hardcore in that movie.
Yeah,
he was sort of a Pawn Richard in some ways.
But in real life, the dance instructor got her pregnant.
Choreographer, I know, which is a sad thing for many guys.
Really. You know what's so funny about like when an attractive famous girl gets pregnant or married, I feel like there's something that happens just on a very deep biological level where most dudes are like, ah, oh,
man.
Yeah. Like they were next on the list.
That's
like if it didn't work out.
They were close.
I'm not gonna say I was next, but I was like fourth.
It's just knowing that the possibility is gone is some sort of like weird thing.
I used to see her when I went to BU and she was at Harvard at the same time, and I used to see her.
Wow.
And she was just it's ridiculous.
Yeah, she came to MBAR a while back, like back in the early MBAR Comedy Death Ray days.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
She came to a couple shows, and it's weird because she doesn't necessarily look like Natalie Portman.
No.
When she's just hanging out, she looks like a hot indie girl.
Yeah.
And you're just like, who is that?
I saw her one time, same kind of thing, running through like a room, and she was just kind of like wearing jeans and like a headband or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was definitely one of those things where, like, damn it! You look normal!
Posehn has this old bit about doing Conan with Kate Beckinsale.
I was actually there that
And then just storming backstage, like you get so mad. He said he started punching the air, like, I could never have you!
Yeah. We were in his dressing room, and she walked by, and he literally, like, punched the tray of cookies. And I was like, he was just like, God! This is bullshit!
He
originally in that joke, I'd done shows with him and he was writing it, and he had one thing in that joke that he had forgotten about, and I had to remind him where he said something like, his dick got so hard he was able to clean the creases where there was dirt before.
I think all guys have that feeling when they see a hot girl, and they don't have the self-esteem to like think they can guess, so they're just like, fuck you.
Yeah, you have to. There's your defense mechanism. Yeah. I saw, and I was actually with my wife. I saw Trisha Helfer one time, and I'm a huge fan of Battlestar Galactica, and I had that almost same reaction. I saw her, and I was immediately immobilized. Couldn't move. Couldn't do anything, and I just stared at her for a really long time. And I'm also kind of obsessed with robots, so having like,
isn't it? P.S.
Yeah. By the way, so add that to this. Add that layer to this, and then so just seeing her in my presence.
Oh my God! So Battlestar must have been like watching a fuck garden for you. Just full on Cylon.
Terrible. I mean, it was just, well, yeah, and just seeing her there in like in my presence, like in the same room. It was incredible. And I really do believe she saw me staring at her for a while, and I didn't know what to do. It was kind of one of those moments. So, like, if I was Posehn, I would have punched a tray of cookies. Me, my defense mechanism is just standing and staring. So that's what happened to me.
Good.
I've seen Katie Sackhoff in person a couple of times, and she's pretty cute, too. She's pretty adorable. Like it's
heightened because of that.
It is heightened because of that, because you already register them as someone that you know of. And so I think that's it too. And the no matter how old or no matter what happens in my life, I will just never be super comfortable talking to
Well, I do it every day with my girlfriend, Chris.
I do it every day with my wife too. Yeah. But it's a little different when you know somebody from watching them.
Yeah.
You know, when you spend weeks and weeks watching Battlestar,
do you automatically feel a little creepy?
Because you're like, I know everything about this story, and I have this sort of image of you already. So going into a conversation pretending not to have that history.
Oh, what do you do?
It's
like, besides give me bonus.
Just so you know, I've spent 3 years watching you. You know, that's
well, see, when I first met Janet, she was performing at a show, and I was so like, oh my god, but something happened where I wasn't intimidated. There was something in me that just sort of clicked and was like, I must possess her. I literally, and over the course of the next month, I think I just ground her will down.
Until
we ended up dating.
I remember it was after a show UCB, and we were at the Cafe 101, and you were already kind of like Chris was really into her just because she was just hot.
Yeah.
And then she started talking about Tron. Yeah, she was funny, but she brought up Tron just willy nilly, and I remember Chris going, "What? Like grab the table."
I'm evacuating my bowels to prepare for flight.
It was fucking adorable, but I was at the time still an angry nerd, so I was like, she probably is fucking playing Chris. She probably knows he's in.
You
got to
find something there. You got to. Where's the chink?
No, we went on our first date. She quietly reached into her purse and pulled out and set a recognizer toy on the table between us, and then just stared at me. And I was like, "Okay."
Wearing down though is a great strategy. I think that's a great strategy for most men. I think the longer you're there, I think girls sort of were like, "All right."
You know. He's clearly not going anywhere, so it's either a restraining order or I fuck it. That's really what a woman has always.
Choices. We need
those are really the two choices a woman always has, right? Restraining order or fuck.
Yeah, well, that's just like the stories in that fucking When Harry Met Sally, the little interstitial stories. It's just like, I asked her out every day until one day she said yes.
He wouldn't stop bothering me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he wouldn't stop coming around.
Yeah, now we're in love. Like, if you knew that guy now, you'd be like, dude, stop going to that deli and asking that girl out. It's creepy.
Seriously, come on. No, but back in the old days.
Back in the old days, you can do that.
When it was important to just breed as quickly as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't have time for adolescence.
We're dead at 45. Do you hear me?
You understand what's going on? It's prohibition. So did you, were you a Second City person or?
So, I sort of a unique experience in Second City. I studied there. I completed the conservatory program at Second City. And then at the time when I was at Second City, this was around 2003, 2004, Second City and NBC were partnering, and I don't know if you guys remember that. They had sort of this, a first look deal or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was invited to participate in a showcase there, and I just finished doing a solo show of mine at Second City at Donnie Skybox Theater within Second City. And I did some excerpts from that solo show in the showcase, and then I was invited to do the showcase for NBC out in Los Angeles, and that's kind of how I just moved and transitioned to Los Angeles. So through Second City, though, I had been already touring and performing with a comedy group there, Stir Friday Night, which is how I met Janet. Because another way I met Janet was because our group performed at San Francisco Comedy Festival.
Yes.
Yeah. And so
– which Janet co-produces. I don't know if people know that Janet and her friends co-produce SF Sketchfest.
Yeah, and it's a great festival. And so – I was performing with this group that was sort of a number of performers from Second City, and it was an Asian American sketch comedy and improv troupe. And then I was in that showcase, and that kind of led me to Los Angeles.
And how long ago was that?
That was like 2005.
Wow, so within 5 years, hit show.
Yeah.
Well, there was 4 years of non-hit show. there was 4 years of really looking forward to a butt dialing commercial, really looking forward to a snack wrap commercial, doing a lot of comedy, getting paid $100 and samosas at Gaylord Indian Restaurant to do comedy for an Indian doctor convention.
Wow.
Yeah, just things like that where I guess just like any actor, and then you just hope that one day something will come that makes sense. And I got lucky because it really is a role that I love. I love, and the show I love. So
yeah, no, it's a great show. Yeah.
And it's a show that I'd watch, which is like, you know, I mean, it's just that's just such a rare thing to have a show that I could actually watch because it can be really uncomfortable for a performer to watch himself. And I don't like to really watch myself, but I could watch the rest of the cast because it's such an ensemble all the time. And it's really fun just to see what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
It really is. Like, it really is just a solid – I mean, you cannot go wrong with a solid ensemble cast show.
No. Yeah. And it's really nice and refreshing to see more of that on TV right now, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah, it's just a very fun thing. And it's a cool thing to show up every day to set and be like, okay, we're going to be in the study room. And it's sort of our bar, like Cheers, you know. It's our study table, but it's always different, you know, because whatever it is, we're just talking about nothing, like how to pronounce bagels versus bagels. You know, yep. I love how mundane.
Girl in college who used to say bagels and I'd punch her in the throat.
But there's also really cool stuff. Like there's like the, when you were yeah the story.
That's why we didn't do it. Always go into a fight you know you could win.
Never do anything else. Because there was even that awesome one where you had an entire storyline, but in the background.
Yeah.
Which was like, that's like just awesome stuff like that for each and everybody.
Well, that's what I love about, I mean, you know, guys like Dan Harmon and Joss Whedon and people who mm-hmm. will, you know, like they'll do a handful of episodes that are pretty straightforward, probably just to kind of, yeah, we got to do this for the network, yeah. We got to get up and running. But then once they have the freedom, they just evolve the show to a whole new level and they start fucking with the format as much as possible.
Yeah, but during those episodes leading up to that fucking with the format, Dan Harmon will comment on it throughout the entire episode.
Yeah. you see it seeping through, you know.
It's just, the way he typed it, just angry.
Well, just like, you know, doing the stop motion episode.
Yeah,
that was beautiful.
That kind of stuff. Those are the kind of things where I always go, God damn it, if I had a show like that, that is what I would want to do with it. That's exactly what I would want
to
do with it.
And it's incredible to be able to do that with, I always think, like, it's a 22-minute comedy, you know, and just I always think about the places we've gone in a year and a half. I've literally, like, fought zombies in a Halloween episode. I've played, like, a Batman character. I've worn, like, 16 different wigs. We've done a kick-puncher comic. We've been in a Kentucky Fried Chicken, 11 Herbs and Spices Experience Space Bus.
Oh, Sanders.
Yeah. And then we went and we were able to be Claymation. And that episode was written by Dino Stamatopoulos, who did Frankenhole and Moral.
Dino was writing on your...
And he plays Starburns.
Yeah, Starburns.
He plays Starburns. And it's just so... It's just a smart... You know, such a smart, you know, written script, which still stays consistent and true to these characters in this world. Yeah. Which
he's brilliant.
I don't even know. I don't know how they do it, but they're able to kind of do
Dino
it.
Dino and Scott Adsit did Moral Oral together.
Yeah.
Dino, Dino also wrote on TV Funhouse.
Dino's been
and Mr. Show
and Mr. Show. Dana Carvey show and the early Conan days. Yeah. He's been a crux in modern comedy.
Dino is sort of in many ways he's kind of a Chevy that a lot of people know or have some ties or have worked with him. And Dino's actually from kind of the same neighborhood as I am in Chicago.
That's the thing. If you ever consume like more, I hate to say alternative theme comedy television shows, but I just don't know what else to call it. But any just that kind of Mr. Show sort of vibe, and you've been influenced by it in any way, you've probably been heavily influenced by Dino Stamatopoulos.
Yeah. I think this. I could be wrong, but he may have written
the audition.
Did he?
He wrote the audition.
Which is one of the greatest. If you guys ever get a chance to see it, one of the greatest sketches.
You got the goods.
Yeah.
He's also that guy. Yeah, but he wrote that sketch and would perform it himself. Then he did it. They did it for Mr. Show. I mean, he's one of the guys. He's next to Bob at the table.
Yeah.
But what happened? Didn't he get drunk and throw a bottle at someone at the Comic-Con panel a couple years ago for Moral Oral?
I'm sure it's happened a few times.
Comic-Con can get crazy.
That sounds like it could be a thing.
That sounds like it might be a thing that he would have done.
Yeah. But that's kind of the to me, it's a wonderful thing for being – I'm a big comedy history buff. And our show is surrounded by so many people who – I mean, then we have Ken Jeong. We have Joe McHale. Yeah. We have all these guys who he's incredible, you know. And he's – I mean, the fact that we have all these like kind of weapons, I feel like, and Jim Rash, our dean. I mean, there's just so many talented, funny people on our show.
Jim Rash. I remember – I knew Jim. I wasn't at the Groundlings, but I took –
I was doing some improv stuff there for a little while until I realized, like, I'll just stick to stand-up. And Jim was growling and, yeah. and fucking yeah. awesome.
He's also great in Sky High, which is a very...
I love Sky High!
It's one of the most overlooked movies ever. So great.
I love Sky High, and then what I wanted to say earlier was Spies Like Us. I fucking love
Spies Like Us. Oh, Spies Like Us. Yeah.
Another Chevy movie. Yeah. Yeah, Sky High was really...
Sky High's got has Dave Foley. It's got Kevin McDonald. It's got the chubby guy from Brooklyn.
No, I don't want to have to break out my Kevin McDonald impersonation, Jonah, but I can do a Kevin McDonald.
Cut out of my head. Who else? Bruce Campbell is in that movie. It's great. And, of course, Kurt Russell.
Oh.
Yeah.
The closer.
Yeah.
Bringing it home.
Yeah,
we just watched Escape from L.A. the other night.
Oh, shit. Oh,
I'm sorry.
That wasn't amazing.
Walks away, presses the button, takes back technology.
I never saw it. I'm like, oh, Escape from New York was rad. Escape from L.A. is going to be great.
Nope.
And it was just like, it was one step too aware.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like
yeah,
it was one step too aware of what it was.
Horrible graphics.
Are you getting? You must. The movie offers must be rolling in on a conveyor belt.
He's falling out of his chair.
Just movie offer sushi. Movie offer.
I'm sure they are. I haven't seen them. No, I did a movie last year called Knights of Badassdom, which was really fun with Steve Zahn and Peter Dinklage.
Love Steve Zahn. Love Peter Dinklage.
He's incredible.
I love Steve Zahn.
Steve Zahn's amazing.
He's incredible. I've always been a big fan of his work.
Too, yeah.
And he's hilarious in this movie. But it was a movie called Knights of Badassdom. It was about live action role playing.
Oh, wow. LARPing
in the woods. And who else? Ryan Kwanten's in it. So the girls will go crazy.
Ryan Kwanten is a fucking fantastic actor.
He's great.
Like I think he and the guy who plays Lafayette might be the two best actors on that show on True Blood.
Yeah, and the guy Lafayette, did he go to Juilliard or? I think he might have went to.
Let's say he did.
Yeah, let's just say he did.
Let's say he did.
But he's really talented. Summer Glau is also in it.
Summer Glau, awesome.
And I haven't seen The Cape yet, but I can't wait. So it was a really cool experience being in the woods with all these people for 2 weeks, wearing a cape and casting magic fake spells.
That's awesome.
Magic missile.
Lightning ball.
I was in a LARP scene with John Heder and Simon Helberg in a movie called Mama's Boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I got to dress.
I got this huge fucking like bear head on and this cape and these fucking things and boots that didn't fit.
Fake bears stuff.
Yeah,
that's,
it was awesome.
That's always a win.
Yeah, lots of magic missiles. I had this huge fucking double-bladed Klingon-looking like bow thing. It was awesome.
That's pretty rad.
That to me was the most amazing thing too, is like being on the set and they had actual real LARPers there and they had like a LARPing consultant for us.
I bet they got really upset quite frequently.
Yeah, well, they were like, inaccurate. You know, there was a lot of like that kind of, you
and
know.
They go, what do you mean? And they just cower. I'm sorry.
Did you make the cover of LARPers Bazaar? Up top.
Oh!
Up top.
I want one. Yeah.
Yes. LARPing fashion at its finest.
Shit.
Did you want to drink some of this?
Yeah.
It's antidote for the poison you just drank, Dr. Jones. It's a callback to earlier.
Callback.
I want to know where people can see you live ever. Do you do any live stuff at I.O.?
I have. Actually, I do improv off and on. I'm performing actually with Janet at San Francisco Comedy Festival.
Nice.
And I'll also be performing...
SFSketchFest.com.
SFSketchFest. I think that's the weekend of January 23rd-ish.
Oh, you're going to be there 23rd? Yeah. They do like 100 shows in 3 weeks.
Too long.
I don't know how Janet does it. I really don't. It freaks me out seeing how many groups perform and how many nights and how many venues there are. And that stresses me out, so congratulations.
Yeah. I mean, I live with her, so I see what she's going through every day.
How?
With scheduling and booking. I tried to book a monthly show at UCB once, and I'm like, too much fucking trouble.
I wasn't even sure
I could keep a podcast together regularly. Like, they book 100 shows, and they do it all themselves.
All the time.
I get upset that there's so many, because I just want to see all of them.
Yeah.
But I can't be there. It's Janet
and a guy named David Owen, and then Cole Stratton, who does the Pop My Culture podcast.
Yep.
You do that one?
I just actually did the Pop My Culture podcast last week
fun,
about the
fun, really fun,
fun about
show.
The best of 2010 with Simon Helberg and a couple other people, Sam Levine.
And Janet, too.
And Janet.
Janet was on it, too.
And so I'll be performing there. I perform in theme park improv with Janet and a couple other people. And then every once in a while, just kind of randomly improv around I.O. I'll do the Armando. We did an Armando with a community cast, which was super fun.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
And, you know, kind of out and around in Chicago every once in a while, too, so...
And where can people find you on the internet?
Find me on the internet at Twitter. I'm at Danny Pudi. And then on the internet, Facebook page, Danny Pudi. I have a page there.
And you can follow me at Timmy Pudi.
which is Chevy Chase's Danny Pudi page.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, always smile. Keep smiling, everybody.
Pon, what's his name?
Pon Richards.
Pon Richards.
Why not smiling?
Pon Richard. I feel like we should have him have you call in every once in a while as Pon Richard.
I guess Pon Richard actually called my mom not too long ago because I was talking about him somewhere, and he's like, "So, Danny, is he interested in maybe coming back and doing another show for benefit?"
He's not smiling!
He's not smiling! I don't see smiling! So, I don't know. Maybe we should. I should call his Pon Richard once in a while. I'll do it.
Let's call him.
I don't feel you smiling right now. Why not?
I can hear it in his voice. There is no smile.
You are not existing in the smile verse.
If you're talking about short circuit, there must be smile.
The important thing to remember is that number 5 is alive!
Well, that's it. We're at our hour. That was a perfect amount of time. God damn it, Danny Pudi. Thank you so much for coming up
here
and being on the show.
It was a lot of fun.
I did remember there is someone else I know in your cast that said she would come on. Gillian said she would come on.
Yeah, yeah.
So we will slowly work our way.
Awesome.
Slowly work
one by one.
One by one. Checking you off.
Nice. Well, thanks for letting me be number 4. Appreciate it.
Okay. Enjoy a burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.